it might also be in the command prompt, that you can do faster in PowerShell. So, server administrators and IT pros tend to be creatures of habit. That means that we learn how to do things a convenient way, and then we keep doing it that way. Take figuring out an IP address. Who here does not open a command prompt and use the command ipconfig/all to find out an IP? No, so who uses that? Right. Why? Because it's worked since the Windows NT days. And if it works and it still works, damn it, I'm going to keep doing it that way. So what this session is about, it's about how a lot of this functionality now exists within PowerShell. And there are advantages to doing things in PowerShell, most of which are that you can then pump it from one bit of PowerShell into another bit of PowerShell. So the session's about 30 things that you do currently using other methods that you could do in PowerShell. And then, of course, you could extend that and use a lot of other things. Now, there will be a video of this session up on channel9.msdn.com, so you don't have to keep clicking photos of every slide that I put up. And there's actually already a video of this session that I gave in New Zealand a couple of weeks ago up on channel9.msdn.com. So, instead of using ipconfig/all, you can use get.netipconfiguration. And this is what it looks like. It gives you the IP address, it gives you the subnet mask, it gives you the DNS servers. Single command, get.netipconfiguration. And with PowerShell, of course, you have tab complete. So you can type get.netip, tab, bang, done. Now, get.netipconfiguration goes further. You can figure out your network adapter names, because one of the things that you'll know is when you're assigning an IP address using the command line, you've got to specify the adapter name. So you can use get.netadapter to find out all of the adapters that are on a computer or a virtual machine. You can use get.netadapterstatistics to actually find out all of the statistics of a particular network adapter, how many bytes have been sent, how many bytes have been received. So this is what that looks like. Here's get.netadapterstatistics. Sorry, I'm used to speaking without these things, so I'm a bit loud, and I'm sure the people at the back there have got some issues with levels. I'll try and tone it down. It's just weird talking to a big room and being a bit soft when you do it. So get.netadapterstatistics, again, information about each network adapter. What if you have to manually configure an IPv4 address? Well, who's familiar with this dialog box? Who still uses this dialog box? That's fine. Systems administrators are not like developers. A lot of this event is about developers and the way that developers do things. And the developers are like a child with ADHD. Oh, shiny, I'm going to do it that way. Oh, something new, I'll do it that way. Systems administrators, it worked like that for my dad. Worked like that for my grandfather. It's like that joke, you know, how many English people does it take to change a light bulb? It's a perfectly good light bulb, it worked for my grandfather, I'm not going to change it. Systems administrators are a bit the same. So they find a dialog box, and if it works, damn it, we're going to use it. However, that's not necessarily the fastest way to do something. And sometimes every second that you can save, everything that you can automate, is going to save you lots and lots of time so that you can go and put out all those other fires that people in your organization have lit and expect you to put out. So configuring an IP address. New net IP address, specify the interface alias, specify the IP address, the subnet length, and then the default gateway. One line of code. Now I'll be doing some demos later, but I spin up a lot of VMs when I'm writing my books. I actually have a Razer gaming controller, and I was actually going to have it here, but I seem to have lost it. So if anybody finds it, there's a $50 reward for Oren's Razer gaming controller at the event, because it's somewhere between here and the speaker room. But what you can do is you can go and put all of these commands as macros into a gaming controller. So rather, if you've got a bunch of common commands that you use, you press the button and it'll go and type it in PowerShell. So, configuring a DNS server. Set DNS client server address. So with two lines of code, you've done all of that IP address configuration rather than right-clicking, and they keep moving it around in the operating system. And to bring up that single IP address configuration dialog box can take you a couple of clicks, something that you can do much faster in PowerShell. Testing network connectivity. Who here uses ping? Right, ping's great. Ping, host address. It's up or it's down. Well, there's a utility built into PowerShell called test net connection. And if you run test net connection and just hit return, what it does is it goes and contacts a host called internetbeacon.msedge.net. So it'll automatically choose a server that's meant to be up on the internet, and it'll go and ping that, contact that host. So it'll still send ICMP packets, which is what ping does. But I bet here that most of you that use ping have a particular host on the internet that you always ping to check if your network's up or not. Who here does? Exactly. I go and ping an old web server I used to manage in the 90s. Why? Because it's usually up. So it instantly tells me, is the internet working? So here's what test net connection looks like. It gives me the response time, and it verifies that ping succeeded. And I don't have to type in an IP address. It's just going to go out and ping a beacon server that exists on the internet solely for the purpose of checking network connectivity. If I want to test a particular host, I can go test net connection. In this case, I'm pinging Google's DNS servers, which are 8.8.8.8, which usually are up except for 2 weeks ago when they went down for Southeast Asia for a couple of hours. And that's what this looks like. So you can use test net connection host, but it gives you more than just ping. You can actually use test net connection with an address and then use traceroute. So instead of using traceroute as a separate command, you can use test net connection with traceroute to get, to get those statistics. And what it'll do is it'll come back and it automatically defaults to not using resolving the host names. Because of course the issue with traceroute sometimes is if your DNS is a bit buggered, traceroute takes a while because it goes up and it tries to resolve every address. Well, that's what test net connection with the traceroute flag actually does. So, telnetting to a port. Sometimes it's a very quick and easy way to verify the availability of a service. Who here has, for example, checked that an SMTP server is running simply by telnetting to port 25 and then entering some commands? Right, well, test net connection will allow you to test the availability of the port. And all it'll do is it'll check, is that port responding to traffic? It won't do, you know, a more detailed SMTP test. But if you want to check if a web server's up, test net connection bing.com-port80. And that'll say, is port 80 responsive? Is port 25 responsive on smtp.com? So again, instead of using a diverse set of commands like telnet, traceroute, and ping, which all were designed a long time ago, you can use one set of consistent commands that can pipe information to one another very easy and designed to accomplish these tasks. So that's test port 25, and that's what it looks like. It comes back and it says, this is the response time, and yes, that port is open. So what about restarting a service? Who here pulls up this dialog box when they want to check if a service is running? Well, that's great, assuming you're on a computer that's got a GUI. One of the things that we've been learning over the last few years is that more and more people are running Windows Server workloads in server core machines. Why? Simply because a server core machine, as long as it supports a workload you're interested in hosting, requires a lot less update management. The majority of updates apply to things like Internet Explorer or issues in the GUI. If you deploy a server running Server Core and you're managing it remotely, then you need to update that server a lot less often. But you need to restart a service on one of these servers. Or what's a quick way of doing a service check? Well, the restart service commandlet replaces netstop or netstart, or going into that GUI and doing it that way. If you want to view all of the services on a computer, instead of going through and pulling up that services console, what you can do is you can run the get service commandlet and then pipe it to out grid view. Now, out grid view will pipe PowerShell output into a nice little scrollable window that looks a bit like this. And it works with any PowerShell command. So if you've got a PowerShell command and it does reams and reams and reams of text, instead pipe it to out grid view, and then suddenly all of those reams of text will be pumped into a little dialog box that you can scroll up and down, and which you can then click on the tabs and it'll actually sort by that tab. So stopping, starting, and setting a service, very straightforward. Stop service, start service, set service. Allows you to go and configure a service without going into all of those properties dialog boxes. Names and domains. Well, to change the name of a computer, you've just spun up a new computer. Who here goes into the system properties dialog box to change the name of a computer? Much easier to use the rename computer commandlet, because that'll do all of it for you. One line of PowerShell, rename a computer. Restarting a computer, instead of sort of right-clicking, clicking start, restart, or whatever, or shut down dash computer minus R, restart computer automatically restarts a computer for you. Shut down computer, very quick way, especially if you've got a Razer gaming keyboard or another gaming keyboard, PowerShell button, bang, computer's switched off or restarted, because that's one of those operations that you do on a frequent basis. To join a computer to the domain, instead of going through the system properties dialog box, you go add computer minus domain name, a datum.internal, and that's just an example domain name. But one of the things I'm trying to get across here is that, as you can see, this is a lot of single line PowerShell stuff. Very easy to remember, but also things that you do on a frequent basis. And instead of you going through a complex set of steps, that might be five or six steps, that might take you 60 seconds, you can do a lot of this in 2 or 3 seconds. Or you can put this all together so that you just paste in a script. I have to build out virtual machine labs with 12 or 13 VMs very quickly, several times a week. I've got it to the stage, and I'll show you how I do this, that I just go and paste a bit of text in and it'll go and create the VM for me. And when you hear that sort of stuff about DevOps, one of the parts of DevOps is this idea of systems administration via code. That is that you get a whole lot of tasks that you do regularly, and they're very simple to automate using PowerShell. And these are some of the commands that make it very simple so that if you're building a lab or if you're building a machine, you can do it very quickly before you get onto the complicated stuff that actually requires you to use your brain. Because most of this you've been doing this for years. You know all of this. It just takes time to do. Well, automate it. Get that bit done fast so that when it comes to the complex stuff, like setting up Scott Guthrie's SharePoint farm, which that's what systems administrators do. We're not worried about doing that because that's part of the job description, right? Setting that up, we can do it without worrying about all of the extra bits and pieces. Adding Windows features, using install Windows feature. The option include all sub feature, all that does is it means everything under that feature, go and install. Include management tools, means go and put all of the GUI components on, and then the name of the feature. Now, anybody here who has used Windows Server 2012 or Windows Server 2012 R2 or Windows Server vNext knows that the .NET framework isn't included by default for 3.5. Well, in this case, if you type this commandlet and then run it and then point it at a shared folder or at a CD-ROM, it'll automatically go and install that because that's needed by a lot of stuff from System Center, Exchange, but for some reason is located on a different installation directory than the normal media. So now I'm going to do a quick demo taking you through just how those commands work. So what I've got is I have here a virtual machine that's set up and ready to go. So what I'll do is I'll put that into full screen. And you can see that this virtual machine's just got a standard name, which I've just installed it. IP address is not configured. And I've got a PowerShell window here. So what I'm going to do is normally I do this with the Razer, but because that's gone walkabout, I can take that one command hit enter, and then bang, IP address configured. Okay, so that's fairly obvious and fairly straightforward. Next thing that that VM needs, of course, is it needs a DNS server address. Because what I'm going to do is I'm setting this VM up, then I'm going to rename it, and then I'm going to join it to the domain. So here, bang, DNS is now configured. Next thing to do is I need to rename the computer. So what I'll do is I'll give the computer a name. Now this would be a lot easier in the next version of server because cut and paste works in PowerShell in the next server just using Control C, Control V. Here I've still got to do the mucking about. Okay, so what does it want me to do now? Restart the computer, and that's it. So what I've done there is I've given the computer an IP address, I've given it a DNS server address, and I have given it a name, and then I've restarted it. And it goes through and it restarts. So the next thing I want to do is I want to sign in. And then what I want to do is I want to join it to the domain. So that's come up, I run PowerShell, and all joining it to the domain is a matter of running that command. It says, what are your domain credentials? Provide the domain credentials, restart computer, and that's done. So that's a new VM, IP address is done, computer's renamed, computer's joined to the domain, all with a couple of commands. And that will be something that you as sysadmins do on a fairly regular basis. And all I've done here is I've said, okay, here's a quicker way of doing it so that you can just paste in some code and it'll go and do it for you. So you'd change the IP address number on the end or something like that when you were statically assigning the address. So here I could log in as, and you can see there that it says a datum. But just so I can keep the nice PowerShell window, I'll come in as just the local admin account because I want to show you installing that file services. So here we are, maximize that window. And that's going and installing that. So that's now going to work as a file server once that completes. Instead of going through that manage, add roles and features, click, 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 do it with a single line of code in terms of a common configuration of a server. Now, this, if you don't know this command, you'll love it, and this is one that you want to remember. When you spin up a computer that hasn't been running for a while, it loses its trust relationship with the domain. And what you need to do is you need to rejoin it to the domain. Who here uses the method of removing it from the domain and then adding it back to the domain? Hands up. Right, using this one command, this will take it out and rejoin it to the domain without a logout. So test computer secure channel, if you just hit enter on that, it'll come back as true or false. True means the domain relationship's in existence, false means it's broken. If you do a minus credential domain slash admin dash repair, it will automatically repair that connection without requiring a sign off of the computer. So there's a command, and that one I love because I teach, you know, a lot of classes with mock, and students are forever breaking virtual machines or doing something that means, and instead of, you know, having them sign out, restart, blah, 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 this requires no restarts whatsoever, and it fixes that domain relationship. Now, for testing with my net firewall rule. So if you need to add a firewall rule, there is a single command that you can do, and I haven't put it there, that actually turns everything off. Because we know when something's not working, what's the quickest way to check that it will work is go and turn our entire firewall off. So there is a command that you can use to do that. I'll give it to you later. But here, this is how you can add a firewall rule using the command prompt. So net firewall rule, display name, allow inbound on port 80, direction inbound, local port 80, protocol TCP, action allow. This means allow traffic on port 80. If I wanted to block outbound traffic on port 80 because I was some sort of cruel bugger, I could use the second command and then someone couldn't use any traffic whatsoever on port 80. I don't recommend using that one unless you're some sort of sadist. In terms of building virtual machines, again, we're using more and more virtual infrastructure to deploy servers, especially for test or development environments. To create a new VM, you can go into Hyper-V Manager and spin up a VM if you want. Or you can go into Virtual Machine Manager and do the same thing. Or you can use a single line of code to go and create a virtual machine. So what this one does is it creates a new virtual machine. It sets its RAM to 2 gig, it gives it a name, it specifies the virtual machine path, and it specifies the virtual hard disk. Now, the only trick with this one is that prepdisk.vhdx is a sys-prepped virtual hard disk. So all you do with that one is you basically install a server, you patch it, then you just run sysprep, and you generalize it, and then you shut it down, and that's your virtual hard disk, and then you just make a copy of that, and then you go and put it in whatever folder you want to create the VM off. A trick with Server 2012 and 2012 R2 is, of course, especially in test environments, you turn on deduplication on the volume that hosts all those virtual hard disks, and you can suddenly store an insane number of virtual machines. I, on my little Lenovo here, it's only got a 400 gig partition. I have 1.5 terabytes of virtual machines on there because they almost all use the same virtual hard disk, so it deduplicates really well. The only trick with creating a VM is that you need to manually assign the virtual machine network to the VM. You can't do that in the creation of the VM dialog box. To create a checkpoint, get VM, pipe checkpoint VM, will checkpoint every virtual machine on the box. Or you can just use a checkpoint VM and specify the VM name. But if you've got a test environment, you can go get VM minus name and then whatever the start of the name is. Let's say you've got Sydney Lab dash DC dash whatever. Just do an asterisk, pipe it to that, and it'll go and automatically checkpoint all of those VMs at the same time. So another quick demo. So this first one is going to create the VM. So I just fire up PowerShell here. And that's it. just created a VM. One line of PowerShell, that's how quick it is to create a VM. The second thing I need to do is I need to configure the network and assign it to the private network adapter, which I've already got configured. And all done. So if I come into Hyper-V Manager here, I can see that I've got a new VM there called AUVM. And if I look at the settings of that VM, I can see it's all configured and it's now connected to the private network. So two lines of code, brand new VM. You can do a third line of code, which might be a bit of a script that'll copy that prepped hard disk and create the folder that it wants to put in. But again, when we're talking about the way systems administration is going, it's all about how can you save time? How can you do things more quickly? How can you automate those repetitive small tasks that you already do? And the problem with us as a cohort where we keep doing things the old way is that we miss out on the efficiencies that we can get from doing things the new way. That by doing things, you know, because that's the way we've always done it, fine, that's great, but it's the people that come in with the new methods of doing the same stuff, because we've still got to do the same stuff, who can do it more quickly, who are going to be able to adapt a lot better to this constantly changing environment that we live in. Okay, so another common task is resetting a user's password. And you can go into Active Directory users and computers and do this, or Active Directory Administrating Center and do this. Or you can have a couple of lines of code. And this is my only slide with a bunch of lines of code. The first line here puts to the variable new PWD the password p@ssw0rd as a secure string. Why? Because you can only reset a password by specifying a secure string. So what I'm doing here is I've got an account, a user account named Optimus, because that's a nice safe word to use. It might be a transformer, it might be a word in Latin. Set AD account Optimus, new password, and then use that new password string, reset. We'll reset Optimus's password to password so that when he logs in, that'll be the password, and then it'll ask him to change it. And that's what the second one does. Sorry, the first one just reset his password. The second one said, go and change it the next time you log on. So instead of having your help desk people or your service desk people when they're doing a password reset, go and do step A, B, C, D, you can have a PowerShell command. And you can get your help desk software to execute that PowerShell command rather than having them go through the GUI. Who here has lots of fun remembering where their flexible single master operations roles are? Right, FSMO roles are a great interview question. Is what does this FSMO role go and do? You can tell whether or not someone's actually studied a certification or has actually spent a lot of time with Active Directory if they can tell you what the different flexible single master operations roles are. It's a really obvious Windows Systems Administrator question on an interview. Now, locating them, if you've just come into an environment, especially in Active Directory's now been around sort of almost 15 years in some environments, which means that people forget where flexible single master operations roles are. And there are more than a couple of organizations that have decommissioned a domain controller just by shutting it down and then wondering why they can't create new user accounts a couple of weeks later because their RIDMaster doesn't exist anymore. So each one of these commands in PowerShell will go and locate those different roles. Now, the nice thing is that in PowerShell, you can also seize FSMO roles. That is, if you've had a domain controller fail and it's unrecoverable, you can use the move Active Directory Server Master Operations role commandlet with the force parameter to actually seize a role. So no more going into NTDS util and locating the appropriate name and specifying it. And it was an awful, awful, awful thing to have to remember how to do because you only did it infrequently. With one command, you can go and transfer single FSMO roles across. So if you're doing an upgrade to a new version of Active Directory, of course you interview the new domain, you add the new domain controllers, you then pull the new flexible single master operations roles from the previous domain controllers across to the new operating system, then you go and decommission your old ones, and then you raise the functional level. So this command will go and seize those and put these on the local computer. Now, to enable remote desktop, this is one of the few ones I've got where I'm actually changing a registry property. And you can change registry properties from PowerShell using the set item property commandlet. So to turn on remote desktop, all you do is you set a particular registry value to zero. And that one line of code will go and do that. So what I'll do is I'll do another quick demo. So here I've got a computer called New DC. And that doesn't host any flexible single master operations roles at the moment. By pasting in this command and hitting enter, it loads the Active Directory module and says, do you want to go and move these roles? So I say yes to the RID master role, yes to the operations master role, and yes to the domain naming master role. And that's it. That's moving flexible single master operations roles with a single command. In terms of a remote desktop, if we come and look at this server here, we can see that remote desktop is disabled. If we want to enable it, all we do is we get this command here. Hit enter. So we then go back to our server manager console and we click refresh. And we can see now that remote desktop is enabled. So if you've got a whole process that you go through when you're setting up a new server, you set your IP address, DNS server address, you name the computer, you join it to a domain, you go in and put roles on it, you go in and turn on remote desktop for management. You can have a text file that's sitting there with pretty much everything that you need to do in terms of setting that up. And you can just go through and either cut and paste or get a gaming controller and just use macros. And you can go and set those up very quickly. Some of you will have, you know, services in, say, with VMM where you apply a template. Well, sure, you can go and do a template. And for very common configurations, that's really great. But most of the time, or some of the time, you're going to be dealing with uncommon configurations where you need to perform manual configuration. And you can save a lot of manual configuration time simply by remembering this bunch of just a small number of PowerShell commandlets. It's not waves and waves of text, because that's the other problem systems administrators have, is if they see a script that's more than a certain amount of lines long, they go, I'm not going to touch that. Can't be bothered, don't have enough time. And it's a pity, but if you're going to get systems administrators into PowerShell, show them some short commands that they can use, and then they start thinking, oh, this PowerShell thing might actually be pretty cool. Because I can see what I was doing before, I found a better way to do it. And if you can find a better way to do something that's not more complicated, it's a lot more seductive. Okay, in terms of checking for updates, get hotfix. Get hotfix will give you a list of all updates that are installed on a computer. So if you want to know if KB Article 123456 is installed on a computer, you can type get hotfix KB 123456. It'll come back with a command. Or if you just want to view all of them, just do get hotfix pipe out grid view. So let me just show you that. And that is all of the hot fixes that are installed on this particular Lenovo workstation that I'm using. So there's a very quick way of finding out all of the updates that are installed. Now, one of the other really cool things about PowerShell is that you can go and point that at a remote computer or a remote list of computers. So if you want to do a really quick audit of what hotfixes are installed on a bunch of computers, you can use that, you know, you can fire that command at a remote computer and you'll see a bunch of different hotfixes that are installed on that computer. Because the problem with WSUS is if you're using WSUS only for updating, is WSUS is really okay, I'm not going to say really good, really okay at deploying hotfixes, but it doesn't tell you about all of those computers that have missed, because it'll know about some of them, but you might have computers out there that don't report to that WSUS server. And if a computer doesn't report to that WSUS server because there's been some screw up in group policy, the WSUS server doesn't know that that computer's missing the update. So if you just want to do a really quick check of every computer in your organization to see if they've got a particular update installed, you can do a get hotfix, push it at a text file that's got a list of all of your servers' names, the hotfix name, and it'll just give you an instant report of every computer in your organization that's missing that particular hotfix. Setting the date and time. When we fire up a computer, it's set to the default time zone. If you use tzutil/s, Oz Eastern Standard Time, bang, that's automatically going to set that computer to use Sydney, Melbourne time. Not Brisbane time, because they're all off on their own thing, but Sydney, Melbourne time. In terms of maintenance, one of the things, and I did a session in New Zealand where I was talking about just how to secure Windows networks. And one of the biggest problems in systems administration security is that of the non-expiring password. Specifically, systems administrators who set their account passwords to never expire because they couldn't be bothered changing them like the normal peons have to. Who here has a friend who has set their account to not expire? Yeah, bollocks, I bet there's more of you. If you want to go and find every account in Active Directory that's configured without an expiring password, because it's not just systems administrator accounts. Who here has a friend who knows of service accounts which are configured to not have their password expired? Because that's the easiest way to do it. How are we going to set up this service account? Oh, well, we could sit there and we could figure out all the permissions it needs and then set it up as a managed service account so the password's always changed. Or screw it, we could add it to the domain admins group and set the password to never expire. That'll work. Because no one here has a friend that's ever done that. Anyway, so search AD account, password never expires, out grid view, we'll go and find every password in the domain that's simply configured to not expire. What you do with that information is your own, but it's going to be one of the first things if you're getting a security audit that they're looking for, because they'll be, why is this password configured to never expire? If you want to go and find inactive accounts, and you define what an inactive account is, say someone who hasn't signed in for 90 days, because HR is really good at telling you that you've got to go and create a new user account for someone, but they're not really good at telling you when someone's left the organisation. And having, if you look at a lot of breaches that occur in organisations, they're often caused by people who have left the organisation and then at some stage later have gone and looked to see whether or not their accounts are still active. Especially systems administrators. Who here has looked into Active Directory and seen the account, a systems administrator account, of someone who left the organization more than 6 months ago? It happens. Okay, well, this command will show you every account where someone hasn't logged on for 90 days. And what you should do is you should simply disable those accounts, because if you disable it and then you don't hear anything about it for a while, you can be pretty sure that that account isn't necessary. So, If you want to search Active Directory for accounts that have been locked out, you can use search AD account locked out out grid view, and that'll give you a nice list of every locked out account, or accounts that are disabled. Search AD account, account disabled. There are a lot of, and it's really worth investigating, a lot of these little PowerShell commandlets, because when you go to learn PowerShell, it's often written by a developer, and they're like, we're going to start with variables. And you're thinking, oh, I just wanted to learn how to do something, not how to program. Because we understand how to script, we can write scripts, but often we're very task-oriented, we've got a small amount of time, and we want to learn how to do a very specific thing. So go and have a look, especially through Windows PowerShell ISE, and you'll see a lot of little commands that will do things that you're currently doing in a way that you might have been doing for some time, but where there's a better way to do it. Anyway, thank you very much for your attention. I'll answer questions, but if you're not interested in asking questions, please fill out your evaluations. So there'll be someone coming around with a microphone. So put your hand up.
Yes, hi. I have a question about PowerShell.
Yes.
Now, PowerShell itself is very powerful, as we can use it to do repeated tasks and so on, but I find that the GUI interface is a lot easier when you're doing single tasks because you get to interact with it and you can't make mistakes. But one thing that I like, if it's available, and I know parts of it are available in Windows 2012, is when you use a GUI to execute or a group of commands, is there a way to record what you are doing?
Yes, so
and save that as a PowerShell command, and like that you can automate things? Is there a way to intercept these?
Okay, so there's a command around the transcript. The transcript noun. And if you do a start transcript and then do a whole lot of PowerShell commands, it will actually record all of the your entire PowerShell session. So then it records it in a format that you can then just take and then turn into a script. Okay, anybody else? Hands up.
Hi. So just on the first slide you had, I think, or the second slide, the one, the command that replaces ipconfig?
Yes.
Did it display the subnet mask?
So the way that you do the subnet mask is that you do it by specifying the number of bits in the subnet. So if you remember your subnetting from many years ago, you will remember that you can either do it as 255.255.255.0 or you can do it as /24. And here we go.
I was referring to the one, I think, before, one or two slides before, the one that displays the IP configs.
Oh, okay. Yes, you can,
This one, yep.
Yeah, okay. So what you can do, it's not, there is a, if you do a dash detailed, it will show the subnet mask.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else got a question?
I've got one question. Just around the get hotfix, is there a way to show what computers have got pending updates?
If you do a detailed get hotfix, so if you specify the hotfix command, it will show you, get hotfix by itself will just show you what's installed. There are some PowerShell commands around WSUS and Configuration Manager which may report pending. But it really depends on the report back, because for it to know, it's got to know it's be in a pending state. But there is a commandlet that will automatically force an installation of all pending updates. Okay, thank you.
Hi. When you did the setting the IP address, I noticed that in the properties you also had a skip as source set to true or false. Is there the ability to configure that straight from the single command, or do you need to pipe it into something?
Sorry, which command were you...
So the where you were creating the new IP address.
So when I was doing the new IP address... That one?
Yes. So if you go into the next slide, I think it was, or in the demo, you had the actual properties come up, and actually had the skip as source feature. All right.
If that shows up in the properties, it's most likely to be configurable through the command.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, question down here.
Yeah, just a quick question. For remote... PCs. Can we use the PowerShell or just...
Yes, so yes. If you are using PowerShell, there's PowerShell remoting. And the other thing is if you come into PowerShell... Sorry, let's do that. So here we are on my new DC. And if I right-click here and go run ISE, what you can do within Windows PowerShell ISE, you can go File, New Remote PowerShell tab. And when you do that, it will allow you to connect to a remote session and to do a remote PowerShell session. And that will simply come up as another window, and then you can interact with it that way. So the other thing you can do is you can initiate a PowerShell remote session from a normal PowerShell prompt, and that will look almost like a Telnet prompt. Or the other thing is that with a lot of commands allow you to specify a remote computer to run it against, and then you'll just get the response back from that command. Okay.
When you put all these commands in the form of a script, like the VM is being provisioned, and they want to set the IP address, DNS, join it to domain, and then reboot it, and once it's come back up, continue to do some other stuff. What's the best approach for this?
So if you were doing this on a very regular basis, and you're wanting to do all of it, what you actually want to start moving towards is a thing called desired state configuration, which is a lot more complicated than this. This is very much a session around, hey, you do it this way, now you can go and do it this way. If you are looking for advanced deployment using PowerShell, there's another session on, I think it's either today or tomorrow, with David O'Brien, who does advanced deployment using single PowerShell scripts that goes in and does all of the IP address configuration, all of the role and feature installation, and handles all the reboots and everything like that. So desired state configuration is what you use if you are doing this a lot. And to a certain extent, that's what we're looking at with the future of a lot of this. A lot of what we're doing already in VMM is quite limited in terms of deployment for virtual machines deployment. Whereas desired state configuration, like VMM will allow you to go, okay, I want to deploy this VM and I want to have these roles on. Desired state configuration will let you do the whole thing. You can do a whole as Scott was saying, you can do the whole SharePoint farm with desired state configuration just by doing a complex enough script. So there's a session on that. I encourage you to go to it because that will answer the question you've got.
What was the session name again?
I'm not sure of the session name, but it'll be David O'Brien, and it might be something about why Orchestrator is getting replaced.
Oops. Okay.
Okay.
So why Orchestrator is getting replaced?
Yeah, that's what his session title is. It doesn't necessarily mean that's Microsoft policy. anybody else? Yep.
Well, his question kind of like led into my question, which was VMM and some of the scripts in there. I mean, I've been trying to do some PowerShell scripts. I mean, going pretty well. But the thing is, my question is mainly like, where can I get more documentation about it? Because there's not enough about VMM PowerShell or SCCM PowerShell, as a matter of fact.
Okay, so one place I would recommend, and if you send me an email, if you work out my, if all you need to do is put my name into Bing or Google, your choice, and figure out my email address. And the only reason I'm saying that's this will go in the video. Send me an email, and I will send anybody who sends me an email, I will send a Pluralsight voucher to for 30 days, and that's got online training, including a whole lot of PowerShell stuff. So all you've got to do is remember to, it's on my webpage, which you'll be able to figure out by typing in Oren Thomas's webpage, and that'll give you my email address. Send me an email, and I'll send you a Pluralsight voucher. And that's got Pluralsight training in it around these subjects. Yeah, SCCM and VMM.
I know you can do like update help, and then you'll get all the.
Yeah, I mean the issue around it is it's such an esoteric topic that a lot of people, there's very few people who need to know it, and a lot of people end up teaching themselves. But there is certainly some guidance around VMM, especially in the private cloud courses about how to do some of that automation.
Thank you.
Hi, I just wanted to know about the copying the virtual hard disk template.
Yes.
What command did you use for that?
Okay, so all you need to do is basically, so the first thing you do is you go and install a VM, you sysprep it, you shut it down. And in the VM's directory, you will have a file that will be your virtual hard disk file. That's it. All you've got to do is just do a file copy on that to a new location. So you get rid of that template VM, you go and put that in a separate folder and call it your templates folder. And then next time you want a VM, you just Control C, Control V, and it'll copy it. And then if you've got deduplication running, you can force a deduplication and then you instantly reclaim the space.
Can you do that in PowerShell?
You can do a copy in for PowerShell, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. There's one right up the back. This will be the last question. Thank you.
Hey, I was just wondering if there's a way to get PowerShell to update itself with a commandlet.
So, no. So PowerShell updates still come through Windows Update, although there will be some news probably coming out of TechEd Europe about the changes to the way that the Windows servicing model is going to be in going forward. But at the moment, every time there's a new revision of PowerShell, you basically have to go and download something and update it. But going forward, there may be a change, but I can't say anything.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.